Material happiness. So here we are going to find that there are places in the universe where deserving living entities get not deep transcendental unlimited happiness, but they are getting material happiness by the grace of the Lord. So it is not a fact that Krishna wants everybody to be suffering, that people are suffering or enjoying according to their own. Others also, the inhabitants of planets known as Kimpurushaloka, made the demon Maya into a calf, and they milked out mystic powers, by which one can disappear immediately from another's vision and appear again in a different form. It is said that the inhabitants of Kimpurushaloka can perform many wonderful mystic demonstrations. In other words, they can exhibit as many wonderful things as one can imagine. The inhabitants of this planet can do whatever they like or whatever they can imagine. What do you think? Does that sound nice? So today you're here, okay, now you have a benediction. You can do whatever you like or whatever you imagine. So that benediction is given to living entities who deserve it. It's not that Krishna doesn't allow such things. The inhabitants of this planet can do whatever they like or whatever they imagine. Such powers are also mystic powers. The possession of such mystic power is called Ishitam. The demons generally learn such mystic powers by the practice of yoga. In the Dasama Skanda, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a vivid description of how the demons appear before Krishna in various wonderful forms. For instance, Bhagasura appeared before Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends as a gigantic crane. While present on this planet, Lord Krishna had to fight with many demons who could exhibit the wonderful mystic powers of Kimpurushaloka. Although the inhabitants of Kimpurushaloka are naturally endowed with such powers, one can attain these powers on this planet by performing different yogic practices. So should we start that? Others also, the inhabitants of planets known as Kimpurushaloka, made the demon Maya into a calf, and they milked out mystic powers, by which one can disappear immediately from another's vision and appear again in a different form. So, of course, this desire to do whatever you like, or whatever you imagine, that desire. Is that a spiritual desire or a material desire? Okay. Who thinks it's a material desire? Okay. Who thinks it's a spiritual desire? Okay. Who doesn't think? Chintamani Prakrasadvashu Kapa Viksha Lakshapateshu Sura Vyadavali Lakshmi Sastra Satasambhava Sadevaram Govindamani Vishantrama. So in the spiritual world, everything is made of Chintamani. Chintamani means a wish-fulfilling gem. Literally it means a conscious jewel. But even the dust there, the Prabhupada says, even if you go to the Vrindavan manifested in this world, you can ask the dust for something, and the dust will give. And the Kalpavriksha, the trees there, give whatever one's desires. Of course, Prabhupada says the devotees have no personal desires to fulfill, but they have many, many, many desires to satisfy their beloved Krishna. So this is our place. This is not only Krishna's home, it's also our home. We come from a place where whatever we want and whatever we can imagine is immediately fulfilled. Not by some practice of mystic yoga, and not by, as Prabhupada said, one can do on this planet by mystic yoga. Of course, nowadays, very few people could do this by mystic yoga. That would be very unusual. Very few people can even perform mystic yoga at the present time. I know of two people, a Vaishnava woman who can do it. Although neither of them are particularly interested in it. I'm sure there's a few more that I don't know about. And I'm sure there's a few people on the planet, maybe 10, 20 people on the planet, who can actually perform this mystic yoga. Many people try. There's organizations that try to teach Kundalini yoga and things. And mostly people just become damaged. This one devotee, natural mystic yoga. He was born to devotee parents. And he told me that for most people in Kali Yuga, playing with mystic yoga is like giving a big chainsaw to a three-year-old. And he said he's met so many people who tried to play with these things and they actually damage their bodies. Sometimes they don't sing because they're releasing forces and powers that they don't have the ability to control. Just like there was in America several years ago, there was some big headline news of these entertainers who worked with tigers, with live tigers, a very famous act. And then one of them got attacked by the tiger. So that mystic yoga is like that. You're playing with very powerful forces, and unless you yourself are very powerful, you may be eaten. This example is given actually in the Bhagavatam, that the mind is a good thing. That the mind is like a wild animal, and the yogi, if he's not careful, he can be destroyed by his mind. So these mystic powers are a product of the subtle body, and they can actually destroy a person, which we'll look at in more detail in a moment. But in our natural state, we are not achieving this ability to get whatever we want by some mystic manipulation of the subtle body. Nor has the inhabitants of Kimpurusha Loka have achieved it. How would they achieve this ability? They are born with it, which means they've achieved it now. How are they achieving?
That's kind of sex. Past the highest level.
Yes, they perform some good karma. They perform some tapasya, as Krishna explains in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is getting a suitable body and mind according to one's actions and one's desires. So someone may do that in the same lifetime through a misplanned view, or one may do it through karma. But one is earning these things. In other words, through hard work, through tapasya, through purification of existence. But in our natural state, we have these things without endeavor. So the soul is hankering to go home. That is the actual, Prabhupada says in the story of the Krishna delivering the wives of the Brahmanas, that ultimately everyone is looking for Krishna. Everything we're looking for in this world, really we're looking for Krishna. So I think everybody would like this ability. Would anybody refuse? You refuse? If you were given today this ability that whatever you could imagine would manifest, would you refuse?
Yes.
Somebody would refuse?
Oh, that's interesting.
So generally we would like this ability. I think if you ask most people on the planet, would you like this? They would say yes. And why are we wanting this? Because this is our natural state. That's our natural state as a soul, to be able to get whatever we want. But we see that there's a problem with this when it's manifested by conditioned soul. So Kimpurusha Loka. Who lives at Kimpurusha Loka? There's a very famous person who lives on Kimpurusha Loka. Hanuman. Yes, that's described in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, that Hanuman lives there. Of course, Kimpurusha means what?
Is it human?
Is it human? Yeah. Kimpurusha. What? Is it human? Because creatures like Hanuman, you're not quite sure if they're human or not, right? Is he human? Is he animal? He's got he's sort of a monkey and he's sort of human. Because he can talk. They live in some sort of a civilization. Of course, they still act like monkeys. Right? After the monkeys found Sita in Lanka, they came back and they just destroyed the whole orchard. They do have that. They do have a monkey nature. But anyway, it's described in the fifth canto that the residents of Kimpurusha Loka are mostly devotees who are worshipping Lord Ramachandra with Hanuman. And of course, we know that Hanuman has all of these sorts of powers, doesn't he? When he first met Ram and Lakshman, in the forest, it was defeated by Sugriva. Go and see who those warriors are. And Hanuman didn't quite want to reveal what was going on, so he changed his form. And that's a mystic power, to change his form. And then he got to change their form. That's his form. Described tomorrow's appearance of Vamadeva. So it's described that when Bali Maharaj and his armies were approaching the heavenly planets, that the demigods all changed their forms and ran away. So they could take forms as birds, whatever. Assume a different form. But of course, Krishna can do that unlimited forms that are all expressions of his different moods. And that ability is there to a small extent in the jiva. Anyway, the residents of this planet can do that. Hanuman changed his form. He looked like a Brahmana, and he was talking to Rama Lakshman in that form, and he could also change the size of his form. Right? When he entered into Lanka, he became a little tiny monkey. When he was jumping over the ocean, he became a huge monkey. He'd take different sizes. And he also had all kinds of mystic powers. Well, basically, he could do whatever he likes. But Prabhupada also talks here, and we find it's interesting that these residents of Kimpurusha Loka, they used Maya Dhanva to get their mystic powers. And Prabhupada talking here about demons. So the problem is that most of the people who are really hankering for such powers are demons, not devotees. And even if somebody doesn't start out being a demon, what often happens is when they get these powers, they become demons. Which is why some of you said, no, if I was offered this benediction, I wouldn't take it. Even though it would mean that I could build a whole campus here in a moment. Right? Wouldn't that be nice? You say, okay, just imagine the campus. There it is, right? Pretty nice library, gardens, everything. But the problem is that when someone has such powers, it's easy for them to become a demon. That's the problem. Because one starts thinking, I am very powerful. Where are these demons getting this power from? They're getting it from the earth, who, by the way, is Krishna's wife. Shakti. So all facilities for worship are given by Krishna's energies. There's one place where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that the actual person who gives the name is Radharani. One cannot give any facility to worship Krishna without the blessings of God. Whatever facility we have for our service is given by Radharani. In the same way the demons are getting their facility, the demons or the devotees on Kimpurusha Loka, they're getting their facility from the earth, from Indra, who is also Krishna's Shakti. But they forget that. They forget that I've gotten this ability from Krishna. And they think, I've earned it. I think that's the problem in this world. If someone engages on this planet in some mystic yoga, or if someone does some good karma, then they think, I've earned it. It's my right. I own it. And that seems rather logical, doesn't it? You have a job. You go to work, you get the money, and you buy something. And then you can say, it's mine. I earned it. Right? Doesn't that seem reasonable? Of course it seems reasonable. Some people think, I own it, it's mine, and I can do with it as I like. I can use it for my happiness. And unfortunately, what a conditioned soul likes is not very nice, ultimately. Conditioned souls wanting to lord it over material nature, to lord it over others, to exploit others. Take things for their own pleasure. But do we really earn anything? Is that possible? So the atheist demons would say, we've earned these powers, we can use them as we like. And we'd say, no, you don't earn them. They're a gift from Krishna. How would we explain that? How would we say, no, you know, you've done your good karma, you've done your tapasya, either in this life or in previous lives. You're borrowed plumes. In what sense? How do we know that? If you're talking to an atheist, how could you convince that atheistic person that what they have, their powers, their abilities, that do all of us have some powers and abilities? Do we all have some? Everybody here has some. Prabhupada says everyone has some extraordinary talent. Is that Yeshua? Everyone has some extraordinary talent. We all have some ability. We all have some intelligence. We have some bodily strength. We have some memory, right? Mm-hmm. We have some fame somebody knows about. Maybe only our mother and father. Mm-hmm. Some potency. So how come it's not us? What's a simple, non-shastric, just logical proof that what we have is not ours?
Well, when you die, you lose everything.
Yeah, it can be taken away.
Sometimes before.
Yeah. So just like one of my kids was renting a place in India. They were renting a place for, I think, about a year. And then one day, the landlord came by and said, I've decided I want my family to stay here. You have to leave in 4 days. So they can do those sort of things in India. They don't have much government. So then you know the place is not mine. If you're in any illusion that something is yours, the fact that someone else has the power to take it away, even if you own the place, just like why we own this property here, right? But who could take it away? Who could take it away? Besides Krishna.
The government can requisition private property.
Exactly. Yes. Even in my native America, where everyone is free, the government can still take your property. They have to pay for it. It's in the Constitution that they have to pay for it. But they don't generally pay you what you would get if you sold it. They pay you far under the market value. And recently there was a Supreme Court case that they can take private property for anything that's considered for the public good, even a shopping mall. It used to be they could only take private property to build a highway, something like that. Anything for the public goods, even if it's a new shopping mall. So you know, it's not mine. What to speak of, let's say there's a war, not only can your landlord take it away, your own government take it away. Suppose there's a war. And some conquering power comes in. Can they take it away? Okay, during World War II, the Axis powers, they were marching to other cities in Europe, and they just took places away. They just said, hey, yeah, we're going to put our own soldiers here. Even sometimes your own country does that. Sorry, we're going to keep our soldiers in your house. We're going to, especially if you've got a farm. We're going to use your food, use your house. Too bad. You guys live in the servants' quarters. So that's how you know it's not yours. Very simple proof. If something's mine, I get to keep it. If someone else can take it away, even if I'm protesting, then the person who can take it away must be the owner. So we're subject to lose everything we have. We don't even need death. Death's not necessary. A bad car accident will do it. A fire. Right? A fire and you lose all your possessions. I'm sure we all know of people, or read of people, to whom this has happened. They go out to eat in a restaurant, they come back, and their homes burned down. One of the people that was building our school had this happen to him while he was working on the school building. All of a sudden, we didn't see him for 2 weeks. And he wasn't answering his phone or anything. And finally, he showed up and he said, my wife and I went to the beach. When we came back, our house had burned down, our phone, our computer, everything. So we didn't even have any way to contact anybody. So this most sort of thing happens. What to speak of your body? Right? My husband's sister was visiting a friend of hers, and she woke up in the middle of the night to use the toilet, and she wasn't so familiar with the house. So she opened the door, thinking she's opening the door to the toilet room. Starts to walk in, it was the door to the cellar. She fell down the stairs. That was maybe 2 years ago, and she still doesn't have complete use of her mind or her hand. She's lost the lot of loose in one of her hands, and she's had brain damage. And her husband was saying, it's amazing how in 1 second your whole life can change. So this is, we're all subject to this, and we know that we're subject to this, right? We could walk down the stairs of the temple and fall and hit our head, and we could lose all of our memory. We could lose all of our physical abilities. I know one devotee in Hawaii who was a quadriplegic. You know, he went to swim in the Ganga and he hit his head on the sand. Young man. So that means that what we have is not ours. The body's not ours. The mind's not ours. Our abilities are not ours because they can be taken away. And as long as we're thinking they're ours, of course, we're always in a state of fear. So the demons, they forget this, and they think, I earned these things, and therefore they're mine. But what does earning it mean? Earning it means that I've convinced the proprietor that I can use it for a while. That's what earning it means. And how do you earn things? You earn things by following the rules of the proprietor. Just like in business, if you follow the company rules, then the head of the company may give you a nice desk and a nice chair, right? And they give you items that belong to the company to use in the service of the company, and they'll even give you things for your personal use. They'll give you a salary. You know, so many things that you can take care of yourself also. Not that everything is directly being used for the company, but they want you to take care of yourself so that you can be a good worker for the company. They'll even give you vacations. Right? So if you follow Krishna's laws, then Krishna will give you facility to use in his service and also take care of you. He'll make sure that you have what you need. He'll make sure you have your food, your home, whatever. And if you start thinking, well, this is all mine, and you start stealing from the company, or you start using the facility the company's giving you to hurt the company and to hurt the other people in the company, then everything will be taken away. So in the spiritual world, everyone knows they're working for the boss. They all know they're working for the boss. And they have no desire to do anything that would displease the boss, not because they're following the rules and not because they want something, but just because they love him. It's like we all have someone that we love, I hope. Or maybe we have someone that we loved, past tense. But if you can think of someone that you either have loved or love a lot, would you ever want to do anything? That's more painful than hurting yourself, isn't it? To hurt someone that you care about. I mean, sometimes if it happens, we're angry or we're just not thinking, and we say or do something that gives pain to the other person immediately. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to hurt you. I didn't want to hurt you. I just want you to be happy. So this is the mood of the liberated soul. Krishna, I just want you to be happy. Radharani, I just want you. So they're not using everything to please Krishna because that's what's in the rule book, and if I use everything to please Krishna, I'll get a nice desk and I'll get a vacation. They just want Krishna to be happy, and Krishna actually wants the devotees to be happy. So Krishna does give them all facility for their service and also all facility for themselves. Yad bhava bhavi tam yom mani jasta tata sam prabhu rudra mani masam yana vishap suttayamadu yamabhari. He gives them their spiritual form, their residence, their jewels, their sitting places, their vehicles, their everything. He gives his devotees everything for their own happy and comfortable life. Now, more than happy and happy. Unlimitedly, boundlessly ecstatic. So in this world, those of us who come to this world, we come here because instead of having love for Krishna, we've had hatred for Krishna, envy. Why do you have to be in charge? Like one of my grandchildren one time said to my son, why do you have to be in charge? Why can't I get a turn? I think he was six at the time. So that's how we feel. And I often hear this from women also. Why does my husband have to be in charge? He's making so many stupid mistakes. Why doesn't he listen to me? We also hear this in ISKCON, you know. That temple president, the most of the complaints in ISKCON are about authorities, aren't they? Why is that person in charge? This fault and that racism? What's I'm going to run underneath that criticism is I would do so much better than Jack. I may not want the responsibility, but at least I want to be the advisor. You know, go ahead, let the other person have the responsibility and have the target on their forehead, you know. But at least I want to tell them what to do. And if they don't listen to me, then they are just useless. And we have this, but we hear this all the time. The school where the person who runs the school where I send my kid doesn't listen to me. My husband doesn't listen to me. You know, even my guru doesn't listen to me. I don't know if I can have faith in my guru anymore. Why is that? Because he does things I don't like. I don't do things the way I want him to do it. I really hear this all the time. So what is this coming from? It's coming from our envy of Krishna. Or anybody who's thwarting what we want to do, you know, here, whatever they like, whatever they can imagine. Anyone who gets in the way of what I want to do, I don't like them. Or at least I don't like what they're doing. And I feel angry and I feel frustrated. They're impeding my service. Right? If you take an anger management course, a friend of mine took an anger management course, and he said one of the main things they teach you is that one of the main sources of anger are other people's incompetencies. That if someone else is incompetent, you know what incompetent means? They don't know what they're doing about them or something. So we become angry. Why? Because we want things done the way we want them to be done. We want to do whatever we like or whatever we imagine is right. And anyone who gets in the way of that becomes our enemy. So this all comes from our original envy of Krishna. It's not that we want to do whatever we like to make Krishna happy. Although, of course, once we join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that's what we say. We say, the reason I'm angry at this devotee is they're impeding our service to Krishna. They're not letting me make Krishna happy. So that's, we cover it with this language. So that way we don't have to face the fact that our real impetus is envy. We can think that now we become very spiritual. You know, you put a little, like you put makeup on an ugly lady. We had a, I shouldn't say too much because I'll reveal who it was. But anyway, I was in a devotional drama where one of the ladies was playing a divine personality. I don't want to say too much because I'll say, if she hears this recording, she'll be offended. Anyway, she was playing some divine personality, and once she had makeup on and costumes, I mean, it was like, whoa. But you just saw around the temple, she was a very ordinary looking person, you know, expert makeup artist. So if you've ever seen some of these fashion models or these movie stars without their makeup and their hairdos, you know, they look like pretty ordinary persons. So actually, we're full of envy and anger, but we put some cosmetics on. I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm doing this for Guru. Therefore, I can criticize the authorities. And I can get angry when anyone impedes what I want to do. So this is the general mood. And therefore, what happens in this world, in the material world, is Krishna gives the living entity a chance. All right, yes, you want to regain your original spiritual position. Do this by following the rules of the Shastra. And first, the living entities are motivated, as Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, the seventh chapter, that there are four reasons why people surrender to him. And the main ones are artha artha. One wants something. One wants happiness, or one wants to be free of distress. So therefore, one follows the rules of the scriptures to retain Krishna. So he says, okay, you follow the rules, and then you can get something that's a little bit like your original spiritual opulence. And if you really follow the rules, you can totally regain your spiritual opulence. But the problem is that when people follow these rules again, they think, oh, now I've done it. I've earned it. It's mine. And they use it against the very person from whom they got these things. So then what happens? I mean, in extreme cases, they actually use it against Krishna personally. So generally what people do is they earn something, they get it by Krishna's grace. Earning it means, I'm showing Krishna that I'm responsible. I'm showing Krishna that he uses nicely. That's what earning it means. I'm following the rules. Exactly like you work hard for a company, you make money for the company, and the company gives you facilities. Exactly like. You And following the Shastra, you're doing it to Pasya. Krishna says, okay, you proved your worth. Of course, Krishna knows what's in the heart. And generally, people just use it for their own petty selfishness, but some demons actually attack Krishna. We see this sometimes with nasty divorce cases, especially with very, very famous and rich people. You know, husband and wife lived together for a long time. Naturally, they know a lot about each other. If you know a lot about someone, some of the things you know, they probably wouldn't want repeated. So then there'll be some nasty divorce, and then the wife writes some book, you know, all of these things about my husband. And she uses the money she got from the divorce settlement to publish the book. People do that kind of thing. Or they get the client list from their company. Do you understand what I mean? They start their own company, and then they approach those clients independently. They use the opulence they got to attack the very person who gave it. Of course, Prabhupada tells this story about the mouse. One of the books that we publish about the little mouse. And so the little mouse is being chased by a cat and goes to the yogi, "Yogi, yogi, I'm being chased by a cat, please save me. What do you want?" "I want to be a cat." "Okay. It's not going to help you, but all right, that's what you get. Be a cat." There was a dog. "Yogi, yogi, yogi, help me, yogi, yogi. Just one time. What do you want?" "Now I'm being chased by a dog." "What do you want?" "I want to be a dog." "So I can help you, but I'll be yogi, 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 help me, I'm being chased by a tiger." "What do you want?" "I want to be a tiger." "It's not going to help you to be a tiger." "Okay." "Look at that yogi. He looks tasty." And yogi looking at everyone. So that's exactly what's happening. And therefore, we're going from one planet to another. So some of these demons, as Prabhupada was saying, like Bakasura. He was someone who earned mystic power. He became trained. "Let me eat Krishna personally." He wanted to personally eat Krishna. What are some other demons that use mystic power to try to kill Krishna? Putana. Who else? Agasura. Who was the brother of Baka? And who else? Kamsa. Yeah. Although he didn't like change his form. So. What other demons use this power to try to kill Krishna? Dinakasura. Who else?
An example of the worship of Lord Shiva, who was after gaining the powers of that Lord Shiva.
Oh, yes, right. Vikasura. Yeah, he worshipped Lord Shiva and then he said, "I want to be able to kill anybody." He was a very strange demon. He decided that the way he'd become immortal was by killing everybody else. That's why we criticize people. Because we think if I criticize everybody else, that makes me better. So it's the same principle. And he thought the first person he would kill would be Lord Shiva. Prabhupada said he wanted to enjoy his wife more, as if she would read the proposal. But yeah, he immediately took the benediction. That's a thank you. That's a very good reason. And immediately attacked Lord Shiva directly. We call that biting the hand that feeds you. Right? So there's so many. And there's a lot of these demons that not only did they use their mystic power to attack Krishna, they use their mystic power to look like one of Krishna's associates. So we have Palambasura. Who else did that? Oh, Pandraka. He's really funny. Pandraka used his mystic power. Actually, he didn't have so much. He just had to stick on a couple of lines. He didn't have much power. But who else tried to look like one of Krishna's associates with mystic power? Vatsasura. Yeah. Of course, the cowboy boys were angry after Krishna killed Vatsasura. They said he killed the cow, so then Krishna created Manasiganga. And there's another one. So Palambasura, Vatsasura, and one more. Vyomasura. Vyomasura came like a cowherd boy. They were playing cops and robbers. And he put the counterpoise in caves and sealed the entrance with rocks. Dhenikasura didn't look like one of Krishna's associates. There may be more, but those are the three I can think of. Kalambasura, Vatsasura, and Vyomasura. And sometimes this happens. Prabhupada says this can happen. And even demons may come into the Hare Krishna movement and look like devotees. I know of at least one case. This one man who was one of the worst child molesters in his time. And when he was discovered, this was in Vrindavan, he said, I have intentionally done this in Vrindavan to show that there's no God in the world is God. Unfortunately, because having in India, we weren't able to take any kind of legal action against him. And he's working there, working in Germany. I'm sure he's doing the same business. Anyway, so sometimes demons will dress like devotees, they will soon. And you can do a lot of mischief that way. Just like the worst crimes were done by criminals who dress up like police officers. I think in America there's 2,500 of those crimes every year. Not a large percentage. You know, if the police officer tells you to pull over, of course you can pull over. Police officer knocks on your door, you then open your door. And if they're a criminal, if they come in and shoot you and take your money, you know, you can open your door for them. Some of the demons actually attack Krishna personally. Some of them use their mystic power to pretend to be devotees and wreak havoc. If you really want to hurt Krishna, you pretend to be a religious person as a demon. But of course, Krishna deals with all of them. And then there are some, like Hanuman and like other residents of King Purusha Loka, who do use these powers in devotional terms. They use their powers to glorify Lord Ramachandra. They do remember that whatever I have comes from Krishna. They do increase their love for Krishna by using these powers. And by doing that, they eventually regain their spiritual body, which has those powers not by austerity, but as a natural result of their love. Because if I love Krishna, then I can be fully trusted. If I'm just following the rules, well, maybe I can be trusted, maybe I can't be trusted, right? You don't know why you're following the rules. Are you following the rules because you really care about the company? Or are you following the rules because you figure that way you get some facility for yourself? But if there's love, if there's actual love, then there's complete trust. So Krishna trusts the devotees who love him so much that he gives his own self. He actually gives himself. Not only does he give them all of their natural spiritual opulences and all of their natural spiritual powers, which they're not even particularly interested in. They're interested in them only as a way of displaying love. They're not interested in them for their own sake. Most residents of Vaikuntha are somewhat interested in them. Depends on the purity of the devotee. But at least the topmost residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, are not interested in such things at all. They're happy to use something in Krishna's service. But even in Dwarka, there's some attachment to their own opulences. Some small attachment. So we were saying that we also have some opulences, right? Do we all have some powers? So it's very nice. Bhakti Sananta Sarasvati in the Brahma Samhita, I forget the number of the verse, it's in the last five verses, where it explains how one can attain Krishna even from a conditioned state. And what he says there is if one sees everything that one has as the gifts of the Lord, then even so-called material activities transform into spiritual. There's many places where Prabhupada talks about that, seeing everything as prasanna. How Sudama Brahmani, he saw everything as prasanna. Now, if you see something as prasanna, you exhibit that vision by using it in Krishna service. It's not just, yes, I see it's coming from Krishna. But you demonstrate that. Right? If I know something's yours, I will use it in a way that you'll be happy with. I will use it in a way that you'll be happy with. But Krishna not only gives the devotees facilities for their service, he also gives them facilities for themselves. And he's also happy when he sees them using those and being grateful to him. So just like when I was in Italy, one of the Pandava Sangha girls gave me this cheddar. It was prasadam from the Murti of Bhakti Siddhanta. So when first I got it, I thought, I don't really need another cheddar. Okay. So I wore it, and she saw me, and she looked at someone else. She says, Priya's wearing the cheddar right here. So Krishna also feels like that. Prabhupada says we're a little bit of Krishna, and we can understand Krishna's psychology by understanding our own psychology. So it's not just a question of something mechanical. Okay, Krishna's given me this, I have to use it in your service. Okay, Krishna, I'm using it in your service. Even the things Krishna gives us for ourselves. He can say, well, I'm using this body in Krishna's service, therefore I'm using all my clothes in Krishna's service. Okay. But even the things Krishna's giving you for yourself, even the things you don't need for his service, do you have anything like that? Do we have at least one thing? All of us have at least one thing like that? Do you have something that you have that you don't really need? You can do all of your service without it, but it's something you like. Do you have something like that? Where'd you get it from? So what does Krishna want you to do with that thing? He wants gratitude. That's all he wants, really. He wants love. Prabhupada said, just like a man, why does he marry that children? So he can't eat any more japatis once he gets married than before he gets married. But generally, after you get married, you have to work harder. Generally. Unless you're a real renunciate. If you're a real renunciate, then you'll work as hard or harder than a married person for Krishna. But generally, ordinary people, when they're single, they don't usually work as well. So why do people get married? Prabhupada said, because they want to share love. So why does a man take the trouble? It's because when he wants to come home from work, he wants to be greeted with love. Of course, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes he comes home and the wife just says, oh, you're finally home. Oh, well, the water heater's not working, and this guy called, and the kid threw up on the floor, and I was just waiting for you to come home and take care of him. But that's not what a man gets married for, by the way. So he gets married, so the woman will say, oh, my hero is returning. Yeah. And guys, that doesn't usually happen, but that's what he's looking for. And so the children will say, Dad, oh. Again, that doesn't usually happen. He hit me! My brother hit me with the fire truck, Daddy, and Mommy didn't do anything about it. That's more what he's likely to get. But that's what he's wanting. He's wanting love. The Prabhupada says that's why Krishna has expanded the living entities for love. So what Krishna wants is we go, wow, you gave me this cheddar. You're so kind. And that's where humility, because these demons become arrogant. I earned it, it's mine, I am great. Humility is part of gratitude. I can't be grateful if I'm not humble. Because if I'm proud, I think, well, of course I got this chart. I deserve it. I mean, I do a lot of service to Hare Krishna, then I should have a chart. In fact, this isn't even good enough. I should be silk with gold embroidery. I mean, I was just in a place where somebody thought that way. The place where they had built in the temple was covered in gold. Still. And their shower looks like an altar. I mean, it really looks like an altar. You think, oh, that must be where they put the deities. My heaven's a shower. Those of you who have been here long enough know what I'm talking about. So the tendency, right, is there. But if we're humble, if we think, I don't really do, what do I do for Krishna? I mean, really, what do we do for Krishna? If you think you do something for Krishna, then look at you a problem and compare what you've done for Krishna to what Prabhupada's done for Krishna. What do you do for Krishna? Or just pick some devotee in the temple who does 10,000 service and, you know, so many people. What am I doing for Krishna? That is some little something. And half the time it doesn't work. Right? Half the time the service that I try to do doesn't even work. Try to get some donations for some project, and, you know, you go to a big donor's house. Yes, yes, I will give you $10 million. They give you nothing. Okay? You try to make a garland, and Pujari comes and goes, that's not any good. But happened to me on Balaram's appearance day. In one temple. I made this garland for the deities on Balaram's appearance day, and I said, that's not any good. As soon as I walked away, they took it all out. So a lot of times our service is a failure. It doesn't even accomplish anything. Or just people get angry with us. We try to do something. Why did you do it that way? Well, what are we doing? What can we offer? And anything we're offering Krishna, he gave us, is so ridiculous. It's like offering the Ganga water back to the Ganga. He gave me my intelligence, okay? I'm using his intelligence. It's his. You know, my father used to give me some money every week, and then I'd buy him some slippers with it. So what service are we doing? And how kind Krishna is. That even though I'm doing, practically speaking, nothing. And I thought, you know, when you first join, you think, I totally surrendered. And after you're around for a while, you realize you haven't surrendered, right? You know, I haven't surrendered anything. I don't do any service. But still, Krishna gave me a charm. Krishna gave me a garland. How many of you have worn a garland in the Hare Krishna movement at least once? Somebody hasn't? You can have this if you want. So how many people, have you seen very many people walking around wearing flower necklaces? Is this a common thing? If you go into Brussels and you go shopping, how many people are wearing garlands of fresh flowers? You seen anybody? Ever? How many times have you worn a garland since you joined the Hare Krishna movement?
Lots.
Did you need that for your service? Was that something necessary you had to have for your service? Did you need it to maintain your body? Just see what nice things Krishna's giving us. Do we need sweets? Anybody need sweets? We'll ask the medical doctors if this is correct diagnosis. Any of us, if we didn't have sweets, we couldn't do our service. Maybe such a lot. But Krishna gives. And what kind of sweets do we eat? How many people out in the world are eating the kind of sweets we eat? Hardly anybody. Not even the Queen of England. Just see. I bet you she doesn't wear fresh flowers very often. Right? So this is the mood of the devotee. And when we think like this, when we see everything as Krishna's gift, and when we think like this, we do, how nice Krishna is. That's so easy to love Krishna. This is so easy. And then, gradually, as we develop love for Krishna, then we will again regain our spiritual position. Then we will again be in a position where we can do whatever we like or whatever we can imagine. Because whatever we like or imagine will be loving. And we will then have that position, not for a little while, because I'm sure we all lived on Kim Purusha Loka at one lifetime. We won't have it just for one lifetime, but we'll have it eternally. Puna janma divijate. One will not again see birth. We will again have that. All we have to do, it's really a simple thing, is again be loving and not be exploited. That's all. It's not really a very complicated thing. Everything we're doing in our Hare Krishna movement is to again reawaken that mood of gratitude. That's all he wants. I'm sorry to inform you, but he really doesn't care so much about garlands and clothes and dresses and even colleges and, you know, he really, those are all means of expressing love. What Krishna is concerned about is love. Yes.
You were saying near the beginning of the class that if we were able to get anything, if we could get that Mr. Powell, we can get anything that we want. it's nice that there's a danger of becoming a demon. But it seems like any of us in the temple, if we actually got that, it seems like the most percentage wouldn't really become a demon, because that's a whole different person, it's a whole different mentality, and that would be manifest somehow already. So if that really happens, that it would be a danger of becoming a demon. And where does that seed come from? Where is that seed? What is it?
Well, I will assume that that seed is no longer existing in you. But I will tell you that that seed exists in me. So, I don't know you well, but I'm going to assume that you're asking this question, because while you're chanting in your service, that seed has now been fully fried. But for most of us unfortunate persons like myself, that seed is very much alive and well. And one way it manifests is any time that we think any critical thought of any other living being. Whenever we're critical of anybody, actually we're critical of Krishna. Whenever I'm angry, unless you're angry because there are atheists out there preaching that it's good to kill your own children, that's another thing. If you're angry because the cows are being slaughtered, if you're angry because people are being trained in atheism, if you're angry at that, but if you're ever angry because you don't get your way, even if it was your way in service, I had something I wanted to do in service and I didn't get my way, I didn't get to do it the way I wanted it, when I wanted it, how I wanted it, if things don't go your way, you press a button on the computer and it doesn't do what you wanted it to do, your car doesn't start running, anytime we're angry, the person we're actually angry at is Krishna. We're resentful that someone is the controller and that someone ain't me. That somebody is better than me, that somebody has something that I don't have, and that I am not. I don't have absolute power. So anytime I feel any anger, frustration, annoyance, irritation, that things are not happening exactly the way I want them to happen, exactly when I want them to happen, that is actually our envy and anger at Krishna, and that is actually a sign that we are acting like demons. So that is, many of us here may no longer have that, but if we have that, if that manifests at all, then actually that means that if we got more power, we might misuse it. We might misuse it, and we've seen in our Krishna movement over and over and over and over again people misusing power. We've seen it so many times, people misusing power. And not they don't even have much power, they don't even have these, Kimpuru Shaloka powers. They're mosquito powers, and still they're misusing them, and they cause havoc. And some of those people who misused their powers did become very advanced in Krishna consciousness. It's not that they weren't. They became advanced in Krishna consciousness. But then they became proud and thought, oh, now I'm advanced in Krishna consciousness. I'm experiencing ecstasy. I've had some visions of Krishna. I must be a great saintly person. Now I can use power properly in Krishna service. I can use, millions and millions of dollars. And I can use having thousands of people say, yes, sir, I'll do whatever you want. And they cause havoc. And they damage people. And at least some of those people are now greatly humbled and chastened and trying to progress in a nice way. Therefore, we see the great devotees. When we read the prayers of humility of the great devotees, we're sometimes thinking, this is a little extreme. The way the great devotees describe themselves, how fallen and sinful they describe themselves as, we think, I'm not that fallen. But, sorry, the reality is that we are. That's the reality. We don't see it, we paint it. We decorate it. We cover it with something. So it doesn't look to us like what it is. If something doesn't look like what it is, that means it's an illusion. we saw ourselves, honestly, it would be unbearable. Which is why Krishna shows us our marches little by little by little. You know, when the day comes that we can actually see what demons we are, then we will enter into ecstasy. And only then. Because you can't let go of something you're not even admitting that you're holding. But that will come little by little, because it's difficult for our own karma to face these things. We want to think that we're working.
I was a little surprised to hear that it had been so
Just like the presence of Vaikuntha. They want to enjoy their happiness, not humans. They're lucky. It's explained that even the queens of Dwarka, they like the opulence of being Krishna's queens. There's only one person who has absolutely zero desire to do anything but please Krishna. She's right there. She's the only person who can fully satisfy Krishna. Everyone else has some. Why do we say the gopis are the most exalted? Because Krishna's not giving them anything. So generally, a woman is attached to a man because he can be her man. She can come to the party with her man. Come to the festival with her man. Show up and here's my husband. Gopis don't get to do that. They have to hide it from everybody. If someone says, didn't Krishna give you that necklace? Jatila says that to her. Didn't Krishna give you that necklace? No. Where'd that flute come from? And Lalita says, oh, it was raining flutes from the sky. So they have to, you know, see that the wrong color chatter? They have to hide it. So but generally, that's one of the pleasures. Because this is, here's my husband, but a handsome, smart, rich husband. Or boyfriend, they can't be the same. And the woman loves a man because he gives them a house. Because she doesn't give them any houses. Because he gives them jewelry. Sometimes he gives them jewelry, but they have to hide it. Usually he makes the jewelry out of flowers and then they fall apart and they go swimming in the jewelry. They don't even get the key. He doesn't give them a house, doesn't give them jewelry, doesn't give them children, doesn't give them status. Nothing. That's what they say. They say, we're not asking to be your wives. All they care about is making Krishna happy. And I think, nothing. Therefore, they're the highest. Everyone else has something for yourself. That they have some attachment to. That's okay. That's okay. Because they're seeing it with love for Krishna. It's not separate from their love. And that's how we should see the things Krishna gives us in this world. We should connect it with our love for Krishna. Even if we do want to enjoy it, connect it with your love for Krishna. Therefore, it says, even if you have material desires, go to Krishna. Why? Because then you connect even your selfish things with Krishna. Eventually, you'll be happy for Krishna, even for giving your selfish things. And after a while, you won't care about the selfishness, you'll just care about the love. But yeah, the deep prema in Vrindavan, the prema in Vrindavan is deeper than the dharma. You know that?
Yeah, it's just
that. What did you think that meant?
I understood that they were attached to pleasing Krishna in a particular way.
No, but that means they're attached, yeah, what do you think? Yeah, they're attached to pleasing Krishna in a particular way, like that. There's some attachment to their opulence and happiness. Are so pure that from our perspective, But if you want to compare the residents of Vaikuntha to the residents of Ayodhya, the residents of Vaikuntha have some separate interests. If you want to compare the residents of Ayodhya to the residents of Dwarka, the residents of Ayodhya have some separate interests.
That makes sense.
Okay. From our perspective, I mean, from our perspective, Lord Brahma doesn't even have any misery. Even Indra has regular misery from our perspective. You know, like it said in Bhagavatam that on the heavenly, on Indra's planet, there's no lust, envy, or greed. Sounds like there's a lot of lust and envy on the heavenly planet. But compared to the earth planet, there's no lust and envy. So there's a relative and absolute. The only absolute is right. Just like Jai Krishna, you're running a project. Do you want the devotees who work in the project to be happy? Do you want them to enjoy their service? Do you want them to give them some facility for their own personal living? Do you want them to be happy with that facility? Do they have to use every single bit of the facility for their own personal living for the college?
No.
In fact, if they did, you'd think it was rather hard. So Krishna also feels like that. But you don't want them to steal. Right? Because he just doesn't want it. He just wants love. He just wants love. So everything is connected with Krishna because there's love. Okay. Is that okay? You can meditate on this room.
Yeah, sure.
Just a little in the class. Yeah, I like shaking people. Very good. That happens all the time, doesn't it? Right? We're reading the books and I read this purport at least 20 times. Where did that sentence come from? It wasn't really that I said anything different. What happens is that as we progress in Krishna consciousness, our ability to understand things changes. And then, of course, you've heard that the residents of Ayodhya are more pure and pure than the residents of Ayodhya. You've heard that so many times. But you didn't think of it like that. One, you weren't, ready. And as the clouds clear, then all of a sudden you hear something and you're like, oh, yeah, look at that portfolio. You'll see. Residents of Ayodhya have some attachment to happiness and happiness, to their own happiness and to our goals. So when we get to, that's what happens. We get, as the clouds clear, all of a sudden you hear something and you go, wow, it's like that. Wow. And that keeps going actually eternally, even after we complete your. Krishna consciousness is a very interesting and dynamic process. Okay? We should probably stop now. Thank you very much. I'll go to Sushi. Thank you. Radha Desh Vaishnava Sri.